band, aren't they? Yay, we're working.
Welcome to Foundations of Emo, hosted by Claire and Danny. Each episode, we take one of our favourite bands and dive deep into their history and origins, reminiscing on our own emo roots along the way.
I was saying that along my head when you said one of our favourite bands. I was like, no, one of our favourite podcasts.
No. I was like, did I do it wrong? I'm like, wait a minute. No, I didn't. Don't confuse me. I'm stupid. So how are you? Any news?
Yeah, Danny's booked like 12,000 gigs.
Yeah, after, I think it was literally the last episode. I was like, there's no gigs coming up and I'm sick of it. And then I bought like 3 sets of tickets in one day. So I'm going to go see Movements, Holding Absence, and I'm going to Brighton to see Bayside.
Yeah, jealous.
Yes, and now I'm excited for gigs again.
Yeah, because now you just literally have a full agenda.
Basically.
You had a big blank one there for a while.
It's a lot of June and July. Next month, the only gig I have is the Black Charade and Fell Out Boy.
It sounds so weird when you say that.
The tribute bands. I was Googling them the other night, and it was like, the UK's biggest Fall Out Boy tribute band. I was like, are there many?
Is there more than one?
And also, apparently the Black Charade is the UK's biggest My Chemical Romance tribute band.
Well, maybe they're the only ones, so by default.
It could be. But they don't, like, dress up as them.
That's what I was thinking. Do you have to, like, be impersonators?
But that's what I mean. If you go and see, an Adele impersonator, she dresses up as Adele.
They're
and
not
stuff.
Impersonators, are they? They're just tributes.
Still, tributes usually do dress like them. Like, I mean, it looks like the Black Charade wear the marching band outfits.
Yeah.
But they don't, look like each of the members of the band or anything.
But how would you dress up like Fall Out Boy?
Look like Patrick Stump.
Wear a little train cap, you know, the little caps he wears. Yeah. Like he's driving a train.
Or a little trilby. He went through a little trilby phase.
And Pete Wentz. How would you dress up as Pete Wentz?
Guyliner.
Yeah.
Lots of guyliner. No, they just look like regular, rock bands.
That's exciting. Maybe they sound like them.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I just want to get drunk and have a dance, to be honest. So,
Michelle texted me the other day and was like, just watch the One Tree Hill episode where Peyton goes on a date with Pete Wentz. I was like, cringe. She goes, but do you love it? I was like, yeah, I love it.
Oh, and we also missed a week of the podcast. We're a week late.
Don't talk about it. People might not have noticed. Okay.
Didn't happen. Never mind.
Life got in the way.
Yeah, it happens.
But we're back, baby.
We are.
Yeah.
I've noticed a podcast I listen to just hasn't posted for 6 weeks. And I was like, I don't feel so bad that we didn't post for 1 week.
Sometimes I go and I'm like, oh, this podcast must have a new episode out today. And then I go and I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Oh, well. We're here now. That's the main thing.
Exactly.
We're here for our Sum 41 episode.
Yes. Did you like it?
Listening to them?
Yeah.
I think I've never really listened to them apart from, obviously the singles I know, the back of my hand. Mm-hmm. But I've never really, listened to them in my own time. And I suppose I think that I expected every song to sound like Fat Lip.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, how am I supposed to listen to albums and albums of these kind of silly songs? But it was better than I expected.
Yeah.
I don't know if I will go back and listen to them very much more. But they have a few tracks.
I think they have a few bangers. When I was listening to them, I was coming back and being like, oh yeah, this is actually a really good song. Anyway, we'll get into it.
Anyway. I think they lost their way a bit with some of the albums.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, they're finished now.
So we don't have to worry about them anymore.
Right, we kick it off.
Let's go.
So Sum 41 are Canadian, originally from Ontario. Their origins actually started all the way back in 1994. The only constant member of the band, Derek Wibley. Wibley, I was about to call him. Wibley. Derek Wibley. And a guy called Grant McVitty, who were inspired by the likes of Nirvana and Weezer. They were originally called Casper, but as their sound moved more towards the likes of NoFX, they changed the name to Supernova, and their drummer was replaced by Steve, can't pronounce his name, J-O-C-Z. How would you say that? Jux?
Sure.
Sure. They first performed as Supernova in 1996, and this date happened to be the 41st day of their summer vacation, and so they changed their name again to Sum 41.
Okay.
Never would have guessed
they
that.
Have a reason for it.
I just thought it was some sort of maths thing.
I never really thought about it, to be honest. Yeah. What age are they? Because I didn't think they were that old, that they could have been around in 1994.
They're the same age as us, I think. So they were super young. Now, hang on. They're 10 years older than us, because isn't Derek nearly 50?
I have no idea.
Is that wrong?
That's why I'm asking.
We're going to cut this part in. So Derek was actually originally the lead guitarist, but when they met their manager and producer, Greg Norrie, he was not impressed with the band's songs or the vocalist, who was a guy called John Marshall. Norrie advised Derek to be the vocalist instead and caused John to leave.
Hmm.
And I don't blame him.
What was Derek doing before? Just guitar?
Lead guitar, yeah. Yeah. So Derek moved to lead vocals and rhythm guitar. The other members at this time were Richard Roy and Dave Baksh. However, the band was involved in a bad car accident early on, which caused Richard Roy to leave. He was replaced by Jason McCaslin, who is in the band to this day. He is the guy who's called Conehead.
Oh.
Do you know why he's called Conehead?
No.
Because apparently he used to eat a lot of ice cream cones.
Cool, cool. I feel like that's the type of band I've always felt like some 41 are.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That same year, they opened up for Len. Do you remember Len?
Yes.
If you steal my sunshine.
Only that one song.
Do you know they're twins?
I don't know any who's in that band or anything.
It's just like a girl and a guy, but they're also from Canada, but apparently they're twins.
Yeah.
Which is it kind of weird, because I always thought the video was a like girlfriend, boyfriend.
I don't remember this.
Maybe not. Anyway. This is a sign of the times. In 1998, they recorded a demo tape on compact cassette, ooh, which they sent out to recording companies. It worked, and they signed to Island Records in 1999, which is a Jamaican multinational record label.
That's so strange.
Very strange.
Imagine you got approached, like, I mean, you're in a band, you're trying to make it, but then, like, a Jamaican record label comes to you. I'd be like, what?
Hey, we'll take what we can get. Their first EP, called Half Hour of Power, was released in 2000 when we were just 10 years old, Danny.
Yeah, exactly. Ages.
Oh, look, Derek was 20. Derek was 20.
Oh, there we go.
I had it written down. Most of the songs on this EP... I can't believe I said they were the same age as us.
4 years old, starting a pop punk band.
Most of the songs on this EP were included as bonus tracks on their debut studio album, All Killer, No Filler, including a re-recorded version of the song Summer from this EP. The group apparently originally planned to include different versions of the song on each of their albums as a joke, but scrapped the idea as they felt it would annoy their fanbase. It probably would annoy me now, to be honest.
What's the song?
I don't know, it's called Summer. Can you imagine having the same song on every album?
Yeah.
I'd be like, not this again.
It's like Escape the Fate doing that, like the guillotine.
Oh yeah, like, yeah.
Part one, part two, part three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first song in this EP is titled Grab the Devil by the Horns and Fuck Him Up the Ass.
That's what I always say.
It features other tracks such as Dave's Possessed Hair.
Oh.
And I think that's why people think Sum 41 are a joke band.
Yeah.
Because they have songs called Grab the Devil by the Horns and Fuck Him Up the Ass.
Mm-hmm.
All Killer, No Filler was released a year after this EP in 2001 and was super successful despite having mixed reviews. The first single from the album was Fat Lip and remains the band's most successful song to date.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, the band have cited Green Day as their main influence for this album.
Yeah, I hear that, like early Green Day,
yeah, like
era.
Jokey toilet jokes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Absolute Punk described the album as, quote, the album that your parents don't want you to discover at age 11 when you're just starting to think that school is bullshit and the only thing that really matters is that ridiculously cute girl who honestly treats you like shit.
Okay.
I just love these.
Although movies. I do feel like we were at that age, like when Fat Lip came out, that you were like, yeah, this band's so
yeah,
cool, because
yeah,
they're... Don't give a fuck.
Yeah, they hate school and school's bullshit.
Yeah.
The band toured around Canada and the US to promote the album and also performed on Saturday Night Live. From the initial success of the album, Derek stated that it led to him to immediate embarrassment, stating that, I've always felt it wasn't that great, if I'm being honest.
At least he's honest.
All Killer, No Filler was among the top 20 best-selling albums by Canadian bands between 1996 and 2016 in Canada. The name of the album comes from a comment from an engineer working in the studio and their initial reaction to the songs.
I know when I was listening to it, I was thinking the name of it is All Killer, No Filler. And I can't remember if I was thinking, oh, really, there is no filler on this album. Or if I was like, that's ironic because I feel like there's loads of filler on this album. I know I felt one way, but I can't remember which way it was.
I remember reading when I was writing this and I was like, God, that's a really harsh comment by that engineer. And then I copped and I was like, no, wait. It's all killer, no filler.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very confusing. It's a good thing. The album was produced by well-known pop punk and punk rock producer Jerry Finn. His work includes Green Day's album Ducky, Blink 182's Enema of the State, The Offspring's The Kids Aren't Alright, and Alkaline Trio's From Here to Infirmary, to name a few.
Hmm.
On a very sad note, Jerry Finn suffered a massive heart attack and stroke in 2008 and died aged just 39.
Jesus.
His legacy in the punk rock world is clear. I know. Never heard of him.
That's really young, though. 39.
Only 39, yeah.
There's only a few years left.
Fuck. What have we done?
We haven't produced any good albums.
We've produced a podcast.
Oh, yes, we have.
Yeah. 2001 was a year of touring for the band, and they played over 300 concerts, which is similar to what we saw from Linkin Park in their early days. They played a month-long tour in October 2002 and named it the Sum on Your Face Tour.
The Sum on Your Face? Okay. You got a little sum on your face there, Claire. Of course they did.
In November, they released their second studio album, Does This Look Infected? Which I just love the name of that album so much.
This is why I feel like they're like young boys laughing at toilet jokes.
They are, though.
Yeah.
This album was more aggressive than All Killer No Filler and definitely less pop. I felt like this album was just kind of less toilet humour.
Yeah. No, it actually, yeah, a couple tracks in this one.
I like trying to be more serious with their themes and, like, you know, what was that song? What's that one? Everybody's got the problems. Okay.
Sure.
Derek Wibley, I can't say his name. Derek said of the lyrics, quote, "A lot of stuff happened in the past year that opened our eyes to new things. When we were writing the last record, everything was so happy-go-lucky. Now this time, we've seen a bit more and our eyes are opened up a little bit." The Hell song, which I think is the song I was just singing, is about a female friend of Sum 41 who contracted HIV. Still Waiting was written after the September 11 attacks, and ANIC is about Anna Nicole Smith and stands for Anna Nicole Smith is a C-U-N-T.
Wow. I didn't get that when I listened to it.
No, and this is just so random. Apparently they hate her.
Okay.
Like, for some reason, they just had this absolute vendetta against her.
Did they know her personally? Like, or is this... I don't know. Seems insane.
They stopped including it in their set list after she died of an overdose in 2007.
Also wild that they have a song about 9/11.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
No. The cover of the album is the band's drummer Steve dressed as a zombie. The album was almost delayed being released as they couldn't come up with a name for it until one day Derek just came up with the Does This Look Infected? And they all laughed and said, yeah, that's what we'll call it.
Wow.
The album debuted at number 8 on the Canadian album charts, and despite receiving positive reviews, it was not as successful as All Killer No Filler. The band again began a long tour to promote this album. I actually really liked this album.
Yeah, I thought that album was good. When I was listening to that, I was like, oh, it's not as toilet humor as I thought it was going to be. And you can have a bit of a bop.
And for some reason, I always thought this was their first album. All Killer No Filler came after. I don't know why I had that vibe.
No idea.
The only thing I remember from those days is that song In Too Deep being played constantly on MTV. Constantly. And then the bit where the guitar kicks in and your aunt comes raising up out of the pool.
Yeah.
In 2004, they took a break from touring and travelled to the Congo with War Child Canada to film a documentary about the country's civil war. Absolutely random.
So random. Like, of all the bands. I just didn't see that coming.
So weird. 2004, so they were what age? 24? No, absolutely made that up.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Inish. In a right. Days after they arrived, fighting broke out near where they were staying. Speaking about the experience, Derek said the UN gave an update about how everything would be fine and the band expected they'd be able to evacuate the next day. However, they woke up at 5 a.m. to the sound of gunshots. They all had to hide in the bathrooms and on the floor until 6 hours later when they and the rest of the civilians were taken to safety thanks to a UN peacekeeper named Charles Chuck Pelletier. Chuck was subsequently awarded the Medal of Bravery by the Governor General of Canada for his actions, and Sum 41 decided to name their third studio album Chuck in honour of him.
Oh, that's
cute.
That's
so cute.
Didn't know that.
I did not.
That's
I think
a wild story, though.
Like, why were they going to film this just so random in the Congo? It's civil war. I didn't know there was a civil war there. Did you?
No, but I've got quite a few clients from there, so...
Tell them to listen to this album.
I was feeling that they were, like, fleeing something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Chuck was released in October 2004, with the band citing Metallica and Iron Maiden being the main inspirations for the album's style. Did you get that vibe?
I can't remember, was it this album? It might have been that, like, I felt like the songs all sounded like they were different bands. And I was like, I don't know if my ear just, like, tries to hear different bands.
Yeah.
Or if they actually sound like it. But, like, I felt like one song was a bit Linkin Park-y, and then I felt another song was a bit, like, something else. So maybe it was that. But I thought it was a bit weird. But I like the album.
I remember this album, and it felt like it was that Green Day era where they're trying to be, like, American Idiot, you know, talking about the government, and we hate the government. But I do actually like this album. The album was notably their heaviest yet, with Decoy Music stating, "For the most part, it's obvious the band has grown up." Other reviews said that the band had never sounded more determined or cohesive. It was a commercial success, selling over 5 million albums, and won a Juno Award in 2005 for Best Rock Album of the Year. But this is one of these albums as well where, you know, when you listen to it, you can remember certain things in your life or like times in your life where you were and stuff. And I remember I was in secondary school and I was like having a fight with my best friend. Do you know what I mean? I was like listening to these songs and like...
Fuck the government.
Fuck the government. Fuck you. Up until writing this episode, I had actually never heard a song, Sum 41 song that came out after this.
Oh, really?
Like literally I stopped at this.
Yeah.
And I just never... I couldn't name one song after this. Could you?
No, but I mean, I never listened to them anyway. They were just never a band for me, so.
Yeah, they were just lost in the same era as, like, with Charlotte and Simple Plan. After a certain album, it just goes, boop, for me, and I forget them. So 2004 was also the year Derek started dating fellow Canadian Avril Lavigne. Apparently, he got a lot of shit from fans because she was considered pop by them. And he was like...
She got so much shit, like, from the day she
came
out.
Yeah, yeah. People would literally go up to him and be like, she is awful. And he's like, cool.
But, like, so what if you don't like her music? What does that mean he can't date her? Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
So, Avril was only 17 at the time they met, but the pair were in the same social circles as they were both in the Canadian music scene. So, they dated for around 1 year when Avril was 19 and Jerick was 23 before becoming engaged and tying the knot in 2006.
She got engaged when she was 19?
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
And I was looking up wedding photos from this and they're actually so cute.
They must be like babies.
They look so cute, isn't it? So there was another big event for Sum 41 in 2006 when Dave announced that he was leaving Sum 41 to work with his new band, Brown Brigade.
Wow, okay.
Great name. He cited creative differences for his departure as they usually do and his new band had a more classic metal sound. He claimed to still be on good terms with the rest of Sum 41. Derek confirmed Dave's departure the next day and said they would only be replacing him with a touring guitarist who would not have any decision-making power in the band or be in the videos, photo shoots, or albums. Which is a very firm approach to take.
It's a bit rough on your man coming in, like.
Yeah, so they hired a guy called Tom Thacker, who was in a Canadian punk band called Gob.
What a name. Gob.
The following year, their fourth studio album, Underclass Hero, was announced for release, and the day after, they released a song on iTunes called March of the Dogs, which ended up getting Derek charged with deportation from the United States because he metaphorically killed the president on it, who at the time was George W. Bush.
Wow. That's wild.
Isn't it? I think it just dropped off, though, and people gave up. I'm like, ah, do we really care this much about it? No. So they posted two songs from the album on their MySpace profile and released the full album in July 2007 through Island Records. It went to number one on the Canadian Albums Chart and number seven on the US Billboard 200 chart, which made it the band's highest charting album so far. Which again, I always find wild because I'd never heard of this album. But how is it their highest charting album?
Yeah, yeah.
But then what age would we have been then? 17?
Yeah.
Maybe we've just like grown up, more important things in our lives. Critics felt this album returned to the sound of the All Killer No Filler days, but some criticised it for sounding too much like Green Day's American Idiot, which upon listening to you, I get that. And My Chemical Romance, The Black Parade, which I didn't really get. Is that at all?
No.
No. In August, they played two shows in Australia and then returned to the US and did a few dates at Warped Tour before doing a tour of the US with Schoolyard Heroes in September and October. Unfortunately, after that, the band announced Derek was suffering from a herniated disc and they were forced to cancel all the remaining shows for 2007. But they were back touring by February the next year and continued until early July when they began preparation for their next album.
Hmm.
Poor old Derek and his back.
Was this when he was like having a bad time though? Or is that coming later?
It's like many bad times.
Okay.
Like many bad times.
But I know, I was just thinking, I was like, I wonder if they're just saying that it's a disc.
Oh, yeah, else. Yeah. No, it actually was a disc. Because
yeah,
I was there.
Yeah. I gave him a call the other day and I was like, was it a disc?
I like, hey Derek, I just want to say, can I just confirm some facts with you here? They actually intended their next record to be an EP for release in April 2009, but they wrote so much material they basically decided to keep going and record a full-length album. Derek said it was safe to say the album would be released in 2009, but Jason and Steve later said not to expect the album anytime sooner than the summer of 2010. Derek might just have been busy because 2009 was the year Avril Lavigne filed for divorce.
Oh.
Sad.
How long were they married for?
Just 3 years, citing irreconcilable differences. However, the two have remained friends, and most sources say Avril just realised she had married too young.
Exactly, yeah. She was 100% like between the age of 19 and 22, like,
yeah.
How different for you?
Yeah, yeah. But they are still friends, apparently. And Derek and his wife dressed up as Avril and Chad Kroeger for her Halloween party.
That's so funny.
Chad Kroeger made some comment, but I can't remember what it was. Well, it was some like trying to be cool comment. I think it fell flat. Yeah.
Chad Kroeger doesn't strike me as someone who's very cool.
No. Sorry, total side note, but I saw some Instagram the other day where this woman was like, my husband told me that when I wake up in the morning with my hair like not done or whatever, I look like Chad Kroeger, and she's like, that's all I can see now.
Did she post a photo?
She posted a video then, and in the background she's like, they say that a hero. But the show must go on, as must the work on Sum 41's next album. They had hired producer Gil Norton for the album, who has worked with bands such as Jimmy Eat World and Foo Fighters, but 1 week into recording, he was dismissed.
Oh.
And Derek decided to produce the album himself. Which, I don't know, is that like control thing where he's like, oh, I want to do it, I can do it better, or yeah. Is he genuinely just crap? Hard to know.
Mm.
Despite Tom Thacker being announced as an official member of the band and co-writing the title track, even after he said that was not going to happen, all guitars in the album are recorded by Derek, and he appears in the album's booklet. In June 2010, Derek said the album was 99% done, but it had significant delays. They had announced they would release a 12-minute snippet for free on their website, but the label stopped this from happening.
I think you want to discuss that beforehand.
2 months later, Derek was hospitalised when he was attacked in a bar in Japan by three unknown individuals.
Oh.
Yeah, he was just like literally set upon by three men and they've never caught him. Them.
Is it because of who he was, or is it just like,
don't know,
really random?
It was never, yeah, I think it was just like super random. An MRI scan showed that he had herniated a disc in his back for the 14th time.
14th time?
Yeah.
Man, I think I just lie down for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So he was obviously advised against performing, but performed with Sum 41 the next day.
Yeah.
After the Japan shows, they were due to play some dates at Warped Tour, but they wisely pulled out of them, posting on their website they were postponing all touring indefinitely while Derek received treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough. But like, I can't believe he got attacked and then played the next day.
That's insane.
And like, it's not like they can just stand still
yeah.
for their show. They have to be like jumping around a little bit. The album saga continued though, with Jason saying that December that the album had been ready for months, but again, it was Island Records who decided to postpone the release until after Christmas. The album was called Screaming Bloody Murder, and the title track was released in February 2011, with the full album being released in March. There did appear to be some difficulties alluded to with the label throughout this release, with the music video for Screaming Bloody Murder never being released due to its content and difficulties with the label. From what I could gather, the label basically deemed the content as inappropriate and politically incorrect.
Yeah.
I think there was just a lot of like gore and blood and people being like stabbed and all.
This album was so weird. Do you know, it reminded me a lot of Panic at the Disco in a way. It was very like theatrical or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I could see that. This song, yeah, it was just a bit of an oddball to me.
Yeah, it was, like, very strange. Because I kind of, as I listened to them all kind of back to back, and I was kind of like, the first few kind of, you know, they matured a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm kind of like not finding it as bad as I thought I would. Then this was on. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, it's kind of like they were going with a theme and then this happened.
Mm.
The song Baby You Don't Want to Know was written and recorded by the band at the last minute for the album, and Derek funded the recording of it because Island Records refused to pay for any more songs on the album.
Like, I don't know what song that is in particular, but is it good enough that you'd have to fund it with your own money to be like,
he thought it was. That's why I'm kind of like, is Derek just really like,
yeah, it does controlling? Sound he's wants control.
Yeah. They did manage to shoot a music video in February 2012 for the song Blood in My Eyes, which was the third single from Screaming Bloody Murder. And at the end of that year, they did a 10-year anniversary tour for Does This Look Infected?
Oh, before it was cool to do an anniversary tour.
Yeah, exactly. But again, while touring with Billy Talent in April 2013, Derek injured his back again, and they had to pull out of the remaining tour dates. That same month, drummer Steve announced he was leaving the band, leaving Derek as the only remaining founding member.
Hmm.
In his statement, he gave no reason for his departure and simply thanked all the fans. However, it's been said that Screaming Bloody Murder didn't do that well commercially, and the band had started to struggle to sell out the kind of venues they usually would, and this led to tension between the members. I read something where, I think they were in Paris, and they were in a venue, and they looked out, and they're like, there was literally no one there, and they were like, what the
hell? Oh
God, like,
that's
that
so
must
awkward.
Be so heartbreaking to be like, how have we like toured with all these bands, sold out shows, and now we're like struggling to fill anything?
That's worse, is that you've have experienced like massive venues and everything, and now it's just like dwindled down to nothing.
So things were quiet for a while, and in May 2014 it became clear why. Derek posted to his website explaining that he had liver and kidney failure due to excessive drinking. He had collapsed on his kitchen floor and spent a week in a coma as the doctors detoxed his body from alcohol. They told him he had a 50-50 chance of surviving and one more drink might kill him.
Jesus.
Do you remember this photo?
Yeah, the photo of him.
I remember seeing this photo and being so sad because I was like, he's dying. Like, he's going to die. Like,
yeah,
he's
yeah, he
so
really
young.
Looked like he was on the way
he
out.
He looked awful. And I don't know if it was like the filter on the photo or if he genuinely was that yellow. Mm. He just looked horrendous. Apparently, when he collapsed, he literally was in the middle of pouring himself a drink and it just collapsed.
His body was like, no, you don't.
Not today. He was released 2 months later and had nerve damage in his feet so bad that he said it felt like he was walking on broken glass.
Ugh.
He was slurring his words and was unable to form complete sentences, and his motor skills had deteriorated so much that he could barely hold a guitar. It took him months before he could strum a chord semi-naturally again. His excessive drinking was due to him self-medicating with alcohol to try and cope with the pain of his back injury.
I was actually thinking that, to be honest. Once he started talking about all the back injuries, I was like, I wonder if that's how he ended up relying on alcohol.
Yeah.
Because that can't be good.
Because oddly enough, he had been prescribed OxyContin, but he didn't want to go on them because he was afraid they would make him loopy and he wouldn't be able to perform. So, like, he wasn't worried about becoming addicted to them. He was worried that it would affect him performing, which is gas.
But he thinks that alcohol would.
Yeah. He said the pain was sometimes so bad he couldn't even focus on talking to anybody. So instead of a cup of tea, he started having a glass of wine and it spiraled from there.
Man after my own heart.
So he said, like, one day he was, like, in the morning, instead of having a cup of tea, he like had vodka and that's just
that
it.
Was it?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I cannot imagine waking up in the morning and wanting vodka. I don't want vodka at any time of the day.
Yeah, I never want vodka in my whole entire life. A mimosa maybe for breakfast.
Oh no, I'd go for that. Yeah, but like when he came out the other side of his recovery, the rest of the band was there waiting for him. They launched a Pledge Music campaign in July 2015 for their next album, and their comeback show was the same month as the Alternative Press Awards. Dave joined the band on stage 9 years after his departure.
Aww.
Yeah. The performance also introduced their new drummer, Frank Zummo. Dave was confirmed to have officially returned to the band the following month, and at the end of that year, they teased 2 new songs on their Instagram profile. On New Year's Day in 2016, Derek revealed their 6th album was nearing completion. They also made the return to Warped Tour that summer. So imagine, like, nearly dying and then coming out of it and your friends are like, it's Grandma. Is it going to play?
We're back. Let's go.
That's cute. Having
it was all a trick to get Dave back, all of it.
Dave, leave Brian Brigade. Having fulfilled their contract with Island Records, Sum 41 were now signed to Hopeless Records. The album called 13 Voices would be the first to feature their new drummer and also guitarist Tom... I can't say his name. Tom Thacker. That's so hard to say. I'm just going to call him Tom. It was also their first album as a 5-piece band, as they now had 2 lead guitarists when Dave returned. They released their first new song in 5 years in June 2016 called Fake My Own Death, and the album followed in October. It debuted at number 22 in the US and was their first top 20 album in the UK since All Killer No Filler.
I like that they kept the other guitarists and they weren't like, well, Dave's back, so you can fuck off.
That would be so awkward, especially when they said, no, we're not going to make them a permanent member of the band. Okay, he's a permanent member of the band. And imagine you were like, okay, now you can leave.
Never mind.
The band headlined the 2016 Kerrang Tour, and from October 2016 to August 2017, they went on their Don't Call It a Sunback Tour.
A sunback?
A sunback. Don't call it a sunback.
A sunback.
Don't call it a sunback. I love their names of these. So clever. This tour was in support of the 13 Voices album, during which they played nearly 100 shows in America, Europe and Asia. They also co-headlined tours with Papa Roach and Pierce the Veil, and in 2018 did a 15th anniversary tour of Does This Look Infected, which I feel is milking it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, now they're milking it.
Yeah, so they had a 10, a 15, nah, come on. They also played Reading and Leeds Festival, Warped Tour and Riot Fest, to name a few. That would have been great to see them at Reading Leeds, or any tour.
You're going to see them.
I know, but like back then when they were like, you know, in their prime, shall we say?
In their prime? One of them just nearly died.
He's like 50 now. In 2019, they announced they were working on their 7th studio album, with Derek saying the album would feature lyrics regarding social and political turmoil over the US and Canada. The band said it was their heaviest and most aggressive to date.
Take a drink.
Everyone says that. Once again, Derek produced the album himself, as well as doing the engineering and mixing. The album was mostly written during their touring for the 13 Voices album, with the lyrics being finished once they'd finished touring. It was released in July 2019 and was praised as being one of the most accomplished albums in their catalogue. Kerrang said it was a darkly personal view of the world and their heaviest album to date.
I actually didn't think it was a bad album, to be fair.
Yeah, I did quite like it.
I feel like when a band like that is like, I'm going to make a political album, it's like, who asked for Sum 41's politics? Like, they have an album called Does This Look Infected?
Yeah.
I'm not like, well, I hope he's got good views on the government. Like.
But I was just thinking there as I was reading that, do you think Sum 41 are a band where their fans came with them? You know the way, or like they've new fans? Because you know when you go see Fall Out Boy and there'll be kids there who are 13 and I'm like, how do they know who Fall Out Boy
are? Yeah.
I can't imagine going to see Sum 41 and there being like 13-year-olds there.
Mm.
I feel like it'd be all...
I only came on board when they got political.
Yeah. So I feel like it'd be all people like me who liked them back in the day. Yeah. But I can't imagine these albums appealing to kids.
No.
I could be wrong. I'll let you know in
June. Yeah, you can let us know. Keep us updated.
They released 4 singles from this album and then again went on to do the usual tour in support of it. And then, what did they do? They did another anniversary tour.
Of course they did.
This time, a 15-year anniversary for Chuck. They also co-headlined a tour with The Offspring. They were pretty quiet over the next few years and just continued to tour around Europe and also did a tour in the US with Simple Plan called the Blame Canada Tour, which ran from April to August 2022. During this tour, they announced their plans for their 8th studio album, which would be a double album called Heaven... dot dot X... dot dot Hell. How'd you even say that? Heaven multiplied by Hell. It will be divided into 2 discs, the first one being Heaven and featuring a return to their pop-punk style from their earlier career, while the second disc, Hell, is a continuation of their more recent, heavier style.
So I'm going to say that this concept is completely lost because we now listen to albums on streaming platforms. Yeah. We're not taking discs out of, you know, like...
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that.
A double disc. It's like, what does that mean? It's like, it's just on Spotify.
Didn't even think of that.
And I listened to it today and I didn't find any difference. Actually, I do remember when I turned it on at first, I was like, oh, this seems like they've gone backwards to like their early pop punk kind of stuff. And then it kind of did take a turn. Now that I think about it, I do kind of see it, but...
I read this before I listened to it, I think. So when I was listening to it, I'd be like, oh, this is obviously one of their heavier ones. This is obviously one of their... But I don't know if I would have copped that.
Yeah.
While I was listening to
it. I don't know if I was listening to their pop punk kind of stuff and being like, wow, this is definitely heaven. Like, angel vibes.
I asked Danny if she'd listened to this yet and Danny was like, oh, no, I have to listen to it. And I was like, it's a double album.
Yeah, and then I opened it today and I was like, 20 songs to listen to before Claire arrives in a few hours. Excellent.
I did like it though. Well, I think I prefer the return to their earlier stuff on this album.
I have to say, I didn't like this album at all. And because I'd liked their previous album to this, the one from 2017, I was like, kind of like, oh, I'm looking forward to seeing what they've done now. I know it's been a few years since they've released something, but I thought it would be better than this. I didn't like it.
Well, don't tell Derek. He thinks this is their best one.
Okay.
They departed Hopeless Records for this album and released it through Rise Records. The first single, Landmines, was released last year with 2 more singles in December and also February this year. Before the album, I have written down here, it was released just last week. But obviously, we're a week late with this podcast, so...
It was released 2 weeks ago.
It was released on March 29th. Because we were so on trend. Just not on time. Sadly, though, last year, Sum 41 also announced that after 27 years... they would be disbanding following the release of this album and a worldwide headlining tour, which I'll be going to this June.
Which I will not.
Discussing their breakup, Derek revealed the decision to move on was made easier because they feel this album is genuinely some of their best work and they will be going out on a high. He said he had given Sum 41 1,000% of his focus and he just didn't feel like he had much more of that in him to continue past this record. And who can blame him? Because at the end of last year, Derek came close to death yet again, when he was hospitalised for COVID-19 and pneumonia, which led to heart failure.
Oh, Jesus.
His wife, Ariana Cooper, made the announcement in an Instagram post, but luckily he seemed to recover quickly and was actually discharged a day later.
So I'd say his body is fucked from like all the years of abuse, so anything could take him down.
But apparently as well, gonna take him down. Apparently this was the second time he almost died from pneumonia as well. So there was some time in amongst there where the doctors were like, you're going to die from pneumonia. And he was like, yeah, whatever. And then when he nearly died from alcohol, when they told him, like, you're going to die from this again, he was like, nah, not again.
I know myself. I'll see it through.
But there's a little photo of him going into the back of the ambulance and he just looks so cute and sad and old. Yeah. So Sum 41 will play their final show in January 2025 in Toronto, which seems very fitting for the Canadians. And that is it.
That's it. Yeah. No controversy or anything?
So do you know what? I didn't look it up because I didn't want to know any controversy.
That's not how it works.
Not that I didn't want to know, but I just feel like he's been through so much. I don't want to know if he's a pervert.
On top and of everything else.
I did actually look for someone. I actually couldn't find any. So there's a lot of stuff out there about like what the other band members have done and stuff, but there's nothing interesting really whatsoever that we can find on the internet. So either they have done or they're very good at covering it up.
Hmm.
But as far as I'm aware, he has never been accused of sexual misconduct.
Good.
He has just nearly died a few times.
Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Bless him.
So do you think you'll listen to them again? No.
No. I mean, if I'm on a night out and Fat Lip comes on or In Too Deep, like, I always have a bop. I always have. I always will.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm never sitting at home being like, I want to listen to Fat Lip.
I think listening to them, it made me realise how they're not a joke band.
Yeah. I think I was surprised by that.
Yeah. And they probably are, again, it's a bit, well, no, I always knew Linkin Park were, like, super talented. But, like, all this going on tour and, going to film a documentary in the Congo and all, and, like, he was nearly deported and then he nearly died and all. It's like, oh, like they actually have been through a lot and there's probably more to them than just like grab the devil by the horns and fuck him up the ass.
That's fair. I think like I was saying, like we were saying on the last episode, that maybe I'd get a ticket to the gig after listening to them. And to be fair, like I probably would have, except for all of the new gigs that have been announced that I'm really looking forward to. So now I'm not so... like, I'll go to anything.
Because say something real grim and be like, please don't die, Derek, before I go see you. Thanks.
Hopefully he doesn't get pneumonia again. Or herniate another disc.
Like, isn't that wild how many times he's hurt his back?
I just think I'd stop moving.
Yeah.
Rather than go through that again.
Like, I can't remember. I feel like when I read it, it was like something in the 30-something times he's actually done it. Like, oh.
Stop.
Just sounds so sore.
And then going on stage after is insane, like.
Which is, but that's. So I know I'm saying, like, oh, is he just really controlling? I think he probably just has such a good work ethic that he's like, I have to work all the time. And like, no, I'm not going to cancel this. Obviously, I have to go on stage and do X, Y, and Z.
You know, but I feel like if you had some other kind of illness and the doctor was like, I recommend you don't play tomorrow, you'd be like, okay. But then you're like, I actually feel fine.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think you can feel fine when you have a herniated disc and you're going on stage to jump around.
But then he was probably drunk the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
Fair. Hmm. So, songs.
Can't remember the names of them. Let me look it up. Do you want to do yours while I look them up?
Yeah. So, my... which one do we do first? Song on repeat?
Sure.
My song on repeat is the Hell song. Which is that one that I'm singing there.
Oh, yeah.
This happened to you.
My song on repeat, is it called It's on Chuck? Tell you now.
Pieces.
No.
I try to be perfect, but no.
Some 42. I typed some 42 instead of some 41. Is it called No Pressure? There's no Reason. Sorry. No Reason.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. I really liked that when it came on and I was like, is this a single? And I was like, I can't remember, but it seems familiar. And I listened to it a few times. So I was like, that's a good track.
Yeah. I really like that one.
And my song to skip is also from the Chuck, and it is called Slipping Away.
I quite like that.
I kind of felt bad. I was like, he's been through some shit, and it's probably like a really deep song for him, but like, it just makes me want to
carve my eyes out. Falling apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I was saying about my whole feud with that girl in my class in school, I remember like literally driving somewhere with my parents. Would I have had this on a Discman at this stage or an iPod? And like looking out the window and being like, I'm falling apart.
Very deep, very deep. I like
my song to skip is actually after a new album, and it's that single Landmines. It just doesn't do it for me.
I heard it anything.
And I was like, nope, don't.
And their cover of Paint It Black, Jesus.
Oh no, terrible.
There's no need for that.
I just feel like any band who tries to cover those songs is just don't.
There's just no need.
Just don't do it.
There's no need.
No need.
The song exists. It's a classic. We don't need to try and make it our own. Like, just stop.
Actually, no. I was driving back from the wedding. Owen had a playlist on. Good playlist, Owen, I would say. But what kept coming on was A Day to Remember's cover of Since You've Been Gone. I was like, no, turn it off. I hate it.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, what have you got for me?
Okay, so our next episode is an interesting one. We've only 5 albums to listen to.
Okay.
But it's spread over several bands because the next episode's
I know what you're going to say, I think. What are you going to say?
Brody Dalle.
So
we're going to do The Distillers and Spinnerette, and then she has a solo album.
I love The Distillers.
So do I. I'm excited to listen.
Oh, there's dirt on this as well.
There's so much shit going on. And like, I've started writing the episode and I've already learned so much and I'm like, oh my God. So,
it's going to be exciting. Good. That's a good one. Yeah, I'm excited to listen.
And I've never listened
to
Spinneret, ever.
Neither
have I. But I love the Distillers.
Oh, I love the Distillers.
I think Distillers have three albums. Spinneret have one, and then I think she has one solo album or something. Yeah.
Oh, I just thought
so. It's not a lot of music to listen to, but it's just like we're gonna have to.
I'm okay with that. Okay, a good one. We can still be friends.
Oh, good. Imagine this end of the friendship. All these years.
Fuck that.
Yeah. That's our episode. We've done it.
It only took us 3 weeks.
3 weeks, but we got it done in 45 minutes. Woo-hoo! Like pros.
So guys, if you would like to follow us on Instagram, you can. What are we?
Foundations of Emo on Instagram and TikTok, and Foundations Emo on X, which we don't use, but you can still follow us.
Let us know what you think of Sum 41. If you have any band suggestions that we should do that have controversy, preferably not perverts, because, you know, sick of that. Let us know as well.
Let us know if you're going to the gig that I won't be at, but Claire will be there.
I'll be there. See you there. Okay, thanks. Bye.